local talk about local issues. It's the Gary Bouton Show on the AJR News Network.
And good morning. Welcome to a Thursday edition. Spike Nesmith is with us in studio, working on the buttons over there. A little trouble this morning, Spike? Has some sticky button issues, apparently. We'll see how we do here. Mike King is handling our phone lines. He's also having trouble with buttons. And Brittany Murray handles our news duties. It's Mud Day. Do you remember that one? Do you remember Mud Day? Your name is Mud. Do you know what that goes back to? The doctor that treated James Wilkes Booth, that shot Lincoln on this, I think it was this day, around this time. No, that was that around this time? Yeah. Shot James Wilkes Booth. He treated James Wilkes Booth, who was escaping after shooting Lincoln, and I guess waited more than a day to notify authorities that he had done so, and then they later arrested him as a conspirator in that shooting of the president, and henceforth the name, your name is Mud, when you do something that it doesn't follow the law. Okay, it's National Mud Day. On our program this morning, as we limp through the mud story, we're going to talk about early West Virginia, not like the 1700s, 1800s. We're going to talk about going back millions of years with a geology professor and a professor emeritus of the WVU School of Music, Christopher Wilkinson. Joe Liebold will join us to talk about a book they collaborated on in just a moment. William Host and Luke Brueger are here from the Center Branch Church. They have a inaugural Christmas Eve event that they're going to be hosting, not at their church, but at the newly remodeled Robinson Grand Performing Arts Center. And it'll be a Christmassy Eve service with music, dancing, etc. And then Denny Hambrick is going to join us. He's a House of Delegates member from Harrison County, recently appointed the chair of the House Education Committee. So we'll talk about his elevation to that position. First up this morning, we hope, sticky buttons and all over here in the studio, that we have Joe Liebold and Christopher Wilkinson on the line. Guys, are you with us?
Good morning.
Good morning, Gary.
Spectacular. I've got an engineer, producer, they're all kind of wiping their brows now that we've got this settled. Joe is WVU geology professor. Christopher, you are a professor emeritus of the WVU School of Music. We welcome you both. And we want to talk about a book that you collaborated on, Roadside Geology of West Virginia, which might sound a little heady to many of our listeners, but I read some notes that indicate, and I'll start with you, Joe, that this is actually a book that was written about early West Virginia. Actually, it would have been early Virginia going back as far as you guys are going back, but it was a book that had been done for some other states, but not the Mountain State.
Yes, yes, and we were very excited to do it. It was an opportunity for us to really tell the story of a very long history of the Mountain State, long before the modern landscape that we see today even developed.
Yeah, I was going to say the book title might even lean a little bit pedantic, but the combination of you as a geologist and Christopher, who is a music background, kind of created this work that should interest lay people and is written for them, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So
that is the role that I played. I had an interest in geology dating back to college when I took a couple of semesters of the subject, and for some reason the interest stuck. And after I retired, I took Joe's course on the geology of West Virginia and came to learn about this series. And the appeal is this is for the general public, the lay person, non-geologist. Yeah. And I represented that readership because that is what I am.
Yeah, I was going to go there. Geology, not exactly in your wheelhouse. So go ahead and elaborate a little bit more. So how did the birth of this partnership come to be?
Well, it came to be as a result of conversations that Joe and I had once a week. I would come into his office hours at the end of a week of lectures on the geology of the state with questions and observations, saw on his bookshelf a number of the volumes in this series, learned from him that the mountain state was not included, and after thinking about this, realized that if we collaborated, we could produce a book meant for the general public interested in the state. And it's a very great idea. By roadside, we mean the book consists of running descriptions of what you see as you drive the major highways of the state, as well as some of the literally West Virginia state routes, like West Virginia 7.
Yeah.
And West Virginia 2 up in the northern panhandle.
Christopher, go ahead.
So we enable people to look out the window, see the formation, see the rocks, see the terrain, and we provide an explanation for how it came to be.
Yeah. This I want to go back to your travels and what you experienced, but since we're on this notion of you kind of stepping outside your academic comfort zone, it wasn't the first time that you've challenged yourself in this way by auditing a course at WVU, correct?
No, I have done that in other areas more closer to my own field of specialization.
Okay.
This was the biggest step.
Okay.
A happy one, and a happy one as well.
Yeah. So where did you go, Joe? Where did you, more specifically, where did you travel? What did you look at? How did you uncover some of the material that's revealed in this book?
Well, to be honest, Gary, much of it was already published in many different scientific journals. And so we would basically prepare a kind of a prelogue before we would go out. And in terms of where we went, it really was dictated by the usage of the roads. So the more popular roads, the interstates and that sort of thing, got priority.
Okay.
And then we would kind of we sort of looked at a map and wanted to make sure that we captured the variety in West Virginia. So we sort of planned out this series of routes where we started on the outside. So we kind of did the periphery of the state.
Okay.
And worked our way in.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this picture in my mind of Paleolithic man sunbathing on the West Virginia shoreline. Explain to us what the mountain state might have looked like many, many, many years ago.
Well, long before the Paleolithic people. You know, West Virginia has been really so many different environments, and probably the easiest one for, I think, most folks to grasp is really the time of coal. And, you know, a lot of folks think of coal as just a natural resource, but to a geologist, it's really a clue that mm-hmm. gives us, information about this, essentially a tropical coastline, where you had these very lush swamp forests that basically provided the raw materials for the coal. So in some ways, coal's kind of like a paleo, almost like, you know, a thermometer, barometer, indicator of all kinds of different conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the more startling facts about this reality, about how coal came to be, is when it was coming to be, what would become West Virginia was down on the equator of the planet.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating that the changes that could have occurred over such a long period of time. Let me explain. We're talking to Joe Leibold, WVU geology professor, and Christopher Wilkinson, who is a professor emeritus of the WVU School of Music. But they came to what some might describe as a rather uncommon collaboration to work on a book called Roadside Geology of West Virginia. Joe, were there any you said a lot of the research was from other material and background work, but were there any discoveries that the two of you made that surprised you?
Well, to be quite honest,
and no is a good answer.
No, not really.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, much of the groundwork, like yeah. I mentioned, had been laid out for us, but really when it came down to it, actually seeing a lot of the places that I had personally never visited,
yeah,
was in some cases a wonderful surprise. And, yeah. And you know, I think especially of the southern coal fields and
yeah.
how the valleys, which of course we have hills and hollers up here in the northern part of the state, but down south they're completely different. You know, every time the road takes a turn, you're confronted with this enormous valley wall, and I think we refer to it as like a wall of trees that just dissects the landscape. And it's, you know, you can understand why the folks down there say the sun shines only for a small part during each day, because it dips behind these tall valley walls.
Yeah, I would think even more so this time of the year when the sun is sitting so low in the sky. Yeah. Christopher, how long did this project take?
We conceived of the idea in the fall of 2013. We got a contract from the publisher in February of 2014, and the book came into our hands this past September 2018.
Okay.
Of course, it took this amount of time because Joe had academic responsibilities during the year, and we fitted in our work spring break and in the summers, and occasionally in the fall. But it was could not be a continuous project because of his responsibilities.
Yeah. Got to do the day job.
That's right. Some of the material I looked at online would lead me to believe that there's quite a few photos that went with the work. Did you have a photographer that traveled with you to document what you were doing? And did you document any of it with video, just out of curiosity?
We had an extraordinary photographer, Maria Afrolian. Afrolian is a Swedish name. She is from Stockholm originally. Her first formal education was at the leading school of photography in Stockholm, Sweden. She came here, majored in geology. As a matter of fact, by sheer coincidence, she was in the same Geology of West Virginia class that I attended.
Okay.
But subsequently, she joined the project, and there's cannot say enough about the quality of her photography. She was highly dedicated.
Yeah.
I heard stories that she would get up at 4 in the morning to get to a particular site 3 hours away just at the right time for the sun to illuminate the formation or the exposure that needed to be documented by photographs. And anybody who looks through the book will be immediately captivated, I think, by what they see.
I've been in West Virginia 45 years. I've traveled a good part of it. You all have now probably traveled more of it than I in doing the research for this book. Are the geological findings varied in different parts of our state? We're kind of a funky state, at least the way we're shaped, and we've got mountains and a few low spots.
Well, to be honest, there isn't a whole lot of variety, which is one of the challenges of the book.
All right.
You know, we really drove over the same rocks many, many times.
Okay.
And each time, probably the real trick was to find a story that was apparent at that particular spot that we could really tell and not be too redundant in terms of, you know, running over the same rock again. But to be honest, no, the sedimentary rocks that that cover our state for the most part, and when I say for the most part, I mean pretty much 99.99%, extend for pretty good distances. So there wasn't a huge amount of variety, but definitely when those rocks were smushed about 250 million years ago, that really gave us the opportunity to talk about some very different things along the roadside.
It might not be a part of the book, but I think, Joe, you might have said, and I'm sure both of you must have experienced this, part of the fun of doing this was meeting West Virginians that you might never have met.
Well, to be honest, most of our work was just kind of run and gun. We would go to an outcrop and describe it and match it up, but we did meet some wonderful folks. We actually stopped to ask directions one time. And, you know, the people are always polite. We talked to some state troopers who were wondering what we were doing by the side of the highways.
Yeah.
And they were always friendly as well.
Well, there are some parts of West Virginia where I'm sure MapQuest and Google Maps don't give you the most perfect picture of where you need to head. Christopher, we'll wrap up with you because we're out of time. You have additional courses to audit that are on your little academic bucket list?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am going to re-audit a course on the subject of geomorphology, which is a very fancy term for explaining how the Earth has the shape it does.
Okay.
The first time I audited this, everything was going swimmingly until suddenly I was informed by my cardiologist I needed to have triple bypass surgery. Needless to say, I blame the instructor in the course for this. but in any event, I'm going to do it again, yeah. And this time there's going to be no interruption.
Well, it sounds like you're a good team, and Joe Liebold and Christopher Wilkinson, we appreciate you joining us. Appreciate the information on the book, and good luck. And good luck in your future endeavors.
Well, thank you, Gary.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we return, we invited a couple gentlemen from the Center Branch Church to join us in studio. They have a couple of services that they are going to be presenting on Christmas Eve at the Robinson Grand Performing Arts Center, and we're going to find out all about it right after this.
You're listening to The Gary Bouton Show on the AJR News Network.
We welcome William Host, who's associate pastor and event director at the Center Branch Church, and Luke Brueger, who's the lead pastor at the same church. Welcome to you guys, and good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary. Thanks
good,
for having us.
Yeah, good to have you here. I tell people all the time, it's always more fun to do these interviews in person than on the phone, even though just because we interview folks from all over the state, sometimes it has to be done on the phone. But glad you got, you're actually our neighbors, right? You're
yes, sir.
Right down the street. Will, I'll start with you since you're the events director. You have an event coming up, as I mentioned a little bit earlier here, at the Center Branch Church, an inaugural event.
Yes,
which would lead me to believe that you're already planning to perhaps do it again. But how did the idea of doing a Christmas service, actually a doubleheader Christmas service, on Christmas Eve at the Performing Arts Center come to be?
Yeah, so Christmas continues to be more and more of a focus for us as a church. Uh-huh. So we always try to do up our Christmas service. And this year, it just happened to be with you know, the Robinson Grand opening up, that we had this crazy idea, what if we could rent it for Christmas Eve? And so we tried several times, and it didn't go through, and we know we wanted it, so we kept pushing, and eventually they said, okay, we can do this. And so it started off as a crazy idea, and then, you know, onto the planning processes, and now it's happening.
Luke, let me ask you, and go ahead and grab the mic. Yeah, that I actually saw a little video clip of you pitching this event, sitting in, I believe you were sitting in the seats, presumably, at the Performing Arts Center, now having been in that environment. What does it add to this service and event that you're going to present to the public? It's not just for your congregation, correct?
Correct, right, yeah. Right.
How does it make it different doing it there as opposed to in the same old place where you've been doing it for a while? At
right,
your church.
Right. Well, one thing is that it gives us a lot more capacity. You know, the theater seats about 1,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that it allows us to do, is just to be able to have more people be a part of the service. But it's an exciting environment because, you know, they've just done the restoration. It's a theater, so it kind of has, you know, just an exciting feel. It'd be fun to be able to present in that environment.
Do you think that those who perhaps have been away from the church for a while might find this environment a little bit more accommodating, to take this opportunity to come back to Jesus, let's say, and listen to what you all will have to say on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, we certainly hope so. Yeah. We certainly hope so.
Yeah. Do you have any idea of what to expect? How many? Go ahead, Will. Just, yeah, shove it back over there.
Yeah, people-wise, we do. We've got a pretty good idea because we're doing pre-registration. It tells us by person how many people are coming to each service. So, yeah,
okay.
We've got a pretty good idea.
Well, I'm sure that there'll be a fair number from your congregation that'll be attending.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yep. Well, give us the lineup. What are you going to do? I mean, I presume this is going to be, you know, a little bit different than Luke just standing up and presenting a homily of some sort.
Right.
It'll be more than that, right?
Yeah, more than that. So we've got a few things up our sleeve. We won't say everything, but we will tell you we've got a ballerina who's going to be performing. We've got a pianist and a cellist. So we'll have something a little bit more on the classy end, and it's going to be nice. And then just real top-notch live Christmas music. A few other creative elements, and then, yeah, of course, a special Christmas message that Pastor Luke will be delivering.
Is this something that was, I'm going to say, produced, since you're going to be doing it in a theater environment, especially for these Christmas? It's not something that you've done elsewhere, right?
No, I mean, the way our church operates, we do have a little bit more of a produced service. You know, we're a modern church, so but we're used to lights and more of a production. But it is all the more so here at the Robinson Grand. Yes, we've got extra gear and, you know,
do you use cameras in your services?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir. Okay. I know that's pretty common anymore in some of the churches that do a lot of music and have typically large number. How many folks would you typically get for a Sunday service?
About 600 people.
Is that right? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you've expanded your opportunity here, but you're used to performing in front of big crowds, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I want to come back as I want to talk about the opportunity for your congregation, because I would imagine that they're a little bit excited about being a part of this. Yeah. And just the opportunity in general to talk to people about why they should come to this, why it's a great opportunity to, we kind of hinted at it earlier, come back to the church, come and listen in an environment that will be non-threatening. We'll get into all that. We're going to take a break. You guys are good to hang on for a second.
Yes.
We're going to take a break to find out what's happening all around the state of West Virginia. Time for your Metro News update, and we shall return.
Now, back to the Gary Boughton Show on the AJR News Network.
Okay, we're talking with Will Host, who's Associate Pastor and Events Director at Center Branch Church, right down the street from our studios here and just south of Nutter Fort. Is that a good way to locate us, I guess? And Luke Brueger, who's lead pastor at Center Branch Church. We're talking about their Christmas Eve services, one at 3, one at 6, doubleheader going on. I know they're excited. I can tell by the smiles on their faces. This is all new for them. Talking about excitement, how many members of your congregation are involved in this? And are they pretty, do young people still say stoked, or am I old fat? I'm asking Spike. Are your people within your congregation excited about the opportunity too?
Yeah, they're very excited. Yeah. We get comments from people like, you know, they haven't been in there yet. And so they're just excited to see what the theater looks like. And of course, they're
to
excited
be on
that we
stage.
Have it.
And to be on stage, yeah.
Yeah.
How about with 600 people, you've got to have a lot of families with kids. Do you have the youth from the church involved in this in a fashion?
Or Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
So
at the Grand, there's a lot more on the production end with lights and sound and stage hands backstage and stuff like that. That is largely comprised of youth.
Yeah.
Yes.
Our country can be a little angry, a little dysfunctional. Not could be, is, right, Spike? Is a little angry, a little dysfunctional at times. Are there folks out there that you feel you can reach through this message? As we said, delivering a message about Christ in an environment that's a little bit different. I think I used the term non-threatening.
Absolutely. That's the only reason we're doing it, is because we know we can be effective at it. It's an enormous investment, time-wise, effort-wise, financially, to be able to have this opportunity. So we wouldn't be doing any of it unless we were convinced that we could reach people.
There's a cost to you, Luke. There's no cost to the public, though, is there?
Oh, no. The event's absolutely free.
Yeah, okay.
The people of the church have paid for everything involved.
Yeah. Now, are you still asking that folks register in advance?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go online. Is it centerbranch.org? Just centerbranch.org.
Yeah, and then
there's a form?
Yes, there is. There is a form, and we've been telling people after Tuesday of this week, we're no longer going to send out tickets just because we cannot get them in the mail in time, but they can pick up their tickets at will call with the pre-registration stamp and go right on it.
And again, the music, the singing, did you invite any folks from outside in, or is it all Center Branch Church?
Yeah, the cellist is from the outside.
Okay.
We invited him in, and then the ballerina as well.
When have you had opportunity to rehearse? You're in a performing arts center. you probably rehearse for your normal Sunday services,
absolutely.
Don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got
with today's, as we're saying, you know, modern church service. I would think it requires some planning and coordination in advance for Every Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So how long have you been working on this?
Well, it depends on what aspect. I mean, like the ballerina, the music we've been working on for months, you know, getting all that stuff to time up. But there's people over the hill right now that are getting our light scenes okay. together and all the production aspects still. So yeah. I mean, we'll work right up until the day.
And if you mentioned it, I didn't pick up on it on the ballerina. Is that somebody that's part of your church or?
No, no, we invited them in from the outside. Okay. Yeah.
Just one?
Just one.
Okay, and what? How will that performance go? Will that be to Christmas music,
we'll let
liturgical
that be a
music? Oh, you guys.
Come
yeah,
and find
yeah.
out.
Yeah. All right, so how long does it does the service last? Or don't we want to? We might not want to. I'm not coming to that. 2 hours.
It'll be about an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm thinking you guys are going to be drained after that. Two on Christmas Eve. Do you have a Christmas Day service?
Yeah. We do not. Not on Christmas Day.
We do have services on Sunday, yes, still.
Yeah, this Sunday, the day before yes, Christmas
correct.
Eve.
Yes.
No service on Christmas.
Correct.
No service.
All right. Well, you will have put in your time, I think, to celebrate the holiday, the holy day. We mentioned, or I had noted that you pointed out this is the inaugural event. When you approached the Performing Arts Center, did you give them a little hint that, and by the way, in all likelihood, we'll want to come back here and do this again?
Not yet. I mean, that's definitely on our radar. We want to see how one goes.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever done a program like this outside Center Branch Church? Is this the first time you've...
Yeah, we typically do Christmas Eve services, and you know it's always a big deal for us. But this is the first time we've taken the service outside
to a venue church. Outside
right,
of the
right the way that we're doing.
Yeah. You know, the church. All right, so we're gonna wrap up with one or the other of you. Let's remind people again who, what, where, when. How do we become a part of this? That's Will's task. Go ahead, Will.
Absolutely. So the event is on Monday, December 24th.
24th.
Services at 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. You know, they can park all around the city.
Yeah, people sometimes ask about that. There's plenty
sure.
of parking. Christmas Eve is not going to necessarily be busy in downtown Clark. There'll be parking everywhere.
There will be parking everywhere. But main lots, you know, you've got the parking garage, you've got Jackson Square, you've got the Capron Center lot, you know, and then the library lot as well. So you're right, there's parking everywhere. They won't have a problem finding a spot, and they just come right in the door.
Well, for folks that are out there and have kind of heard people talk about the reason for the season, we've given them a good reason to come learn even more. We're making it really easy for them, or you are, with a couple of services.
Yes,
good luck. I hope it works well. I'd have a smile on my face, too. It sounds like it'd be fun, and I hope you see a lot of faces that the ones we've talked about that maybe have been away from a church for a while.
Will you be there, Gary?
I've got family coming in. It will be discussed. How about we put it that way? Yeah. You're not going to get a definite yes or a no out of me, but thank you for putting me on the spot, Luke. I appreciate the message and certainly appreciate what you're doing. Will Host and Luke Brueger, both with... do you go by Will? Will Host and Luke Brueger, both with Center Branch Church, talking about their Christmas Eve services. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And hope it goes well. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, House of Delegates, new chair of the House Education Committee, Danny Hamrick, will join us right after this.
Your daily dose of sanity, The Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
We welcome Danny Hamrick, House of Delegates, Harrison County, and the new chair of the House Education Committee. Danny, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Congratulations. This is an opportunity that you kind of wanted, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been something that I've looked forward to since being in the legislature. I've spent 6 years in Charleston so far. When I first went in, I mean, education was, you know, one of the things I wanted to focus on most, you know, try to make some major reforms and you know, turn the system around a little bit.
Yeah.
And now I, like I said on a previous show, that I see kind of a renewed vision there with Speaker Hanshaw, and I think we have a lot more opportunity to or a lot of opportunity to move forward with some of those things now. So,
Hoppy Kirchival has a commentary on his on the Metro News website, wvmetronews.com, this morning, indicating that both you and Patricia Rucker, who will head up the Senate Education Committee, have a very tough assignment ahead, that this is not an easy post.
No, I mean, I fully knew that going in.
Okay.
It's not easy. It's going to take a lot of, you know, a lot of study time, a lot of research, a lot of input from, you know, people across the spectrum. We're going to have a really good makeup of committee members, current administrators, you know, people with experience with higher ed, retired public educators. We have a lot of people to gain insight from, as well as, you know, people across our communities from across the state.
Mm-hmm. A conservative Republican agenda when it comes to education doesn't always play well with teachers or the teacher unions. How do you think things will go in 2019? It wasn't exactly smooth sailing last year.
Yeah, and I fully expect to approach all of the groups, all of the stakeholders, and you know, talk to them about the issues, and you know, see what agreements we can come to. There've always been disagreements within education, but I kind of want to come at this from a new angle. I want to, you know, try to start a new relationship with our public educators, our higher ed folks, and, you know, try to eliminate any of that animosity that
right.
was there prior. You know, most of that, I honestly don't really understand why it was there, but, you know, I want to, like I said, try to, you know, start fresh and, grow a new working relationship with all the folks involved.
Yeah, one area that should be, I'm the way I'm reading it, a little bit settled is that, I mean, the governor, I think the Senate president, and a lot of delegates and senators from both parties are pretty well agreed that we're going into this considering another 5%. Increase for public employees, and including teachers, and that we may not have a permanent fix yet for PEIA, but we're certainly working at it. So I don't think these are going to raise the ire that they did last year. Do you?
I certainly expect that it won't be in quite as tense of a situation as it was last year. I mean, yes, we are going into it, you know, expecting to look at the additional pay raise bill pretty early on in the session, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
We'll hear probably from the governor in his State of the State address. And that's something I'm sure most of our members are supportive of. That'll be an issue more for the Finance Committee. Certainly most of us were supportive of a pay raise last time, too. It just took a little while for the governor to actually get us some revenue numbers
right.
that were, you know, high enough to show we had the money to do that.
Sure.
Once we had that, we passed the 5% raise last time. You know, this time, if we come out initially ahead like we are right now, it should be,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say smooth sailing, but a lot smoother than last time.
We had David Perry on yesterday, the president of the State Board of Education. He mentioned that the board will be proposing a multifaceted plan to legislature that would make changes and updates to a school aid formula that hasn't been changed in quite some time. Are you familiar yet with any of the ideas that they'll be bringing to you?
I haven't heard of their ideas. I'm somewhat familiar, or pretty familiar, with the school aid funding formula, and it definitely needs some changes. There are some disparities across the state, even being at border counties or, you know, lower population
right.
counties. It definitely does need to be looked at. And I look forward to, you know, seeing what the school board's preparing to propose to the legislature for sure.
It is part of your goal and the Education Committee's goal going to be to take a serious look at whether we're properly training students for the available jobs in West Virginia, and in some cases that might include more help for technical school training and jobs that perhaps don't require a college education?
Yeah, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is my biggest goal going into the session. That's what I talked to Speaker Hanshaw about when I first went in and asked for this position is, it's our biggest gap in West Virginia, our middle skills gap, the jobs that don't necessarily require a four-year degree but do need some sort of technical training. And I think we are falling behind there a little bit. We do have great community and technical colleges across the state and some great technical centers with our County Board of Education, but there definitely needs to be some improvement there. There's a lot of opportunities for the community and technical colleges to work together with the local county boards of education. There hasn't always been a great relationship between them. I want to try to, mold that a little bit, work that out. And honestly, I think that some of the dual credit courses and things could be started earlier in high school as well. Instead of waiting to 11th and 12th grade, why not start kids in technical training in 9th grade? But that's something, that's something we have to look at and research, hear all the facts from all those on both sides.
We're talking with Danny Hamrick, who is a member of Harrison County House of Delegates. And I always remind people, in a little sliver of Taylor County, right, Danny?
Yes. Yeah. About 600 people or so in Taylor County.
Yeah, okay. And he's the newly appointed chair of the West Virginia Legislature's House Education Committee. One other thing before we wrap up here. You seem to believe that that we can help education by giving more control back to local boards of education. Is that a correct interpretation?
That's a broad view of it, but I think less top-heavy bureaucracy in Charleston and more control in the local level, whether it be the county boards of education or actually giving the teachers more control in their classroom.
Okay.
Those are some things that can help significantly. We've done some of that over the past 2 years, but I think there's a long way to go still.
Well, we wish you good luck. As Hoppy says, you got a big hat to wear, it'll be a challenge. But again, congratulations on the opportunity, which is, I'm sure, how you're viewing it.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, it'll be a challenge, but I'll put all of my effort into it and look forward to working with everybody across the state that's interested in improving education, and we'll get to the goals that we set.
Well, you'll be into the thick of it here very shortly. Danny Hamrick, House of Delegates, Harrison County, we appreciate you joining us this morning, and good luck.
All right, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Okay, we're going to take a break. That's it for today, with the exception of a final word from Hoppy Kirchival. We'll join him right after this.
Weekdays from 9, it's the Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
And we don't have Hoppy on the line yet. Spike, I don't know if you saw any of it. I was checking in on the streaming of his show yesterday, and I believe in a portion of his show, Hoppy had on his son. Ben is his son, is that right? Yeah, that does sports, I think, for CBS Sports Online, something like that. Anyway, he had we've got Hoppy, okay. Hoppy, are you there?
I am, sir.
Okay. I was going to tell people about what we've got coming up tomorrow, but I was explaining to Spike when we mentioned that we didn't quite have you yet that I caught a little bit of the stream yesterday, and it was Hoppy and Son yesterday for a while, wasn't it?
It was. And
he
did, was in.
And he won the ugly sweater contest, too.
He did. There was no question he won the ugly sweater contest.
All right. I wanted to make sure I had that all right. I was pretty sure. Okay. So I actually left you a little more time today. I was being gracious, giving you a little holiday love, and
And then I didn't show up.
We struggled to find you. Yeah, yeah.
I apologize. Well, no, I was called by Tony Caridi.
All right. Well, very kind of you to join us as always. What's coming up next?
All right. We're going to talk to Delegate Sean Fluharty, Democrat from Ohio County. He takes issue with my commentary about the decline of Greyhound racing. Also coming up, the decision by the president to pull out of Syria. We'll have a couple of perspectives on that. We'll get the report on it and talk to West Virginia 2nd District Congressman Republican Alex Mooney about that. Brad McElhinney will join us later in the program. A big meeting today by PEIA, by the PEIA Finance Board, on what PEIA, the Public Employee Insurance, will look like next year for the thousands of West Virginians who use PEIA. Also coming up, State Treasurer John Perdue has a great idea for a Christmas present. We'll tell you about that. And Dave Wilson is at the Bad Boy Mowers. Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa. Marshall takes on South Florida tonight. And he will join us at 11:45 to preview that game, which also will be heard on Game Day Radio on some of these same stations tonight.
I actually, somebody said it nearby me, and I thought they said Sarsaparilla Bowl. I had never heard of that before.
Gasparilla. Gasparilla.
I get it. That's a different one. And Tony, real quick, Tony, did you get any quick assessment of the recruiting, the signees from yesterday?
No, he was just berating me about something. So that's all it was.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Take care.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye. Okay. On our show tomorrow, we're going to have fun tomorrow. We've got a couple of WVU researchers will be joining us to talk about how they are exploring cider apple production. You know how big hard cider is anymore? They're going to talk about how some West Virginia producers can take advantage of that. We'll see you tomorrow.